Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. We're calling on your help to make your listening experience the best imaginable. All you need to do is take a short survey. Visit acast.com/survey. That's acast.com/survey. Your opinion matters.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and at 13 hours GMT on Monday, the 23rd of September, these are our main stories. Hundreds of thousands of tourists are to be repatriated following the bankruptcy of Thomas Cook, the world's oldest travel firm. A French drugs company and the country's medicines watchdog are standing trial over the prescription of a drug believed to have killed hundreds of people. And seven children have died in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, after their classroom collapsed. Also in this podcast.
It's just really wonderful that to know and reassuring that a dirty, pervy, angry, messed up woman can make it to the Emmys. So thank you so much.
Big wins for the comedy Fleabag at the Emmy TV Awards in Los Angeles. Game of Thrones did well too. But first.
We chill out on it. We fall in love on it. And when it is over,
never forget it.
It is the perfect holiday.
Don't just book it.
Thomas Cook it.
A television advert 8 years ago for one of the world's biggest travel companies, Thomas Cook. Now the firm has collapsed after last-ditch talks to save the business failed. Thomas Cook was the world's oldest travel company, formed by an Englishman, Thomas Cook, in July 1841, when he arranged to take a group of temperance campaigners from Leicester in the English Midlands to a teetotal rally in Loughborough, 17 kilometres away. Each passenger then was charged 1 shilling for the return train journey. Today, 178 years on, efforts are underway to repatriate hundreds of thousands of tourists, most of them British and German, who've been left stranded after the collapse of the travel firm and its subsidiaries. The government in London has described the operation to fly the British passengers home as its biggest peacetime repatriation effort. These Thomas Cook customers arrived at Manchester Airport in northern England this morning to find the company had ceased trading.
Got told to come here now to find out my flight's been cancelled with 3 kids. My son's got ADHD and autism and his sister, and they're sobbing their heart out in the car.
Booked a 2-year package holiday over a year ago, but it had Thomas Cook flights. So obviously yesterday I contacted to check everything were going ahead as normal with the holiday. They told me that under no circumstance would the holiday be cancelled. Obviously I've set off here at 3 a.m. in the morning, been given a duty of care number, and they've told us now that the holiday can't go ahead as there's no planes available.
Chris is a cabin crew member for Thomas Cook Airlines and was expecting to be in work today.
I was due to be on a flight from London Gatwick around lunchtime, and it's kind of been a panic situation, if I'm honest. And I've just kind of been up all night waiting for the text to come through to say, don't report for work tomorrow. And that text came through. So it's kind of been almost head down the lines very slowly.
In Germany, a major market for Thomas Cook customers, insurance companies will coordinate the response. 140,000 German holidaymakers are having to make alternative arrangements. Here's Thomas Wagner of Deutschland Radio.
About 140,000 German tourists who have booked their holidays with Thomas Cook are in this moment somewhere in the world. But they can be sure that they will be brought back without paying for that, because according to German law, they have a special assurance for this. The problem is that the date of their flight back could be delayed for some days. Especially the German flight company Condor is forbidden to transport, beginning from today, passengers which have booked the Thomas Cook trip. But beside of this, Condor will continue its business as well as Neckermann, but nobody knows how long these two companies will continue their business in Germany. Condor applied already a credit of emergency from the German government.
William David is on holiday with his wife and friends in Florida and says he's not sure how they'll get back to the UK.
We're due to be flying home on Tuesday. We've got flights only, so we're not at all protected. And basically, it's the uncertainty of, you know, should we start looking for alternative flights? Ideally, we could all do to be home Tuesday. We all work full time, you know, we've got other issues to get home to.
Thomas Cook's chief executive, Peter Frankhauser, said the downfall of the company was a matter of profound regret.
I know that this outcome will be devastating to many people and will cause a lot of anxiety, stress and disruption. I want to apologize to my colleagues, who I know will be heartbroken. You all fought so hard to make Thomas Cook a success.
Our business correspondent Theo Leggett has spent the morning at Gatwick Airport, south of London.
Here there are a lot of people from the Civil Aviation Authority, the UK Civil Aviation Authority, directing passengers who turn up at the airport and explaining to them what's actually been happening, that the airline is no longer in business and that their flights have been cancelled. I've spoken to many of those passengers and, to be honest, most of them have taken it in good heart. They say they're very upset about losing their holidays and it's extremely inconvenient, but most of them won't actually lose out financially. And they say that their sympathies really are with the thousands of Thomas Cook staff who aren't just missing a holiday now, they're losing their jobs. And that, they all say, is much, much more serious.
Why is it that Thomas Cook failed?
Well, Thomas Cook has put out many reasons over the past couple of years for why it's been suffering financially. It's brought in factors like last year's very hot summer, which deterred people in the UK and Germany from travelling further afield because it was very warm at home. They've cited customer uncertainty because of Brexit, people not bothering to book holidays because they're worried about their financial situation in future. Also terrorism fears, that kind of thing. But these are all short-term factors. In order to understand what's really gone wrong for Thomas Cook, though, you have to look at the longer term as well. And a big factor has been, frankly, that the market has changed. 10, 20 years ago, it was commonplace for people to go to a shop on their local high street, book a holiday, book the hotel, book the flights, book the hire car, all in one go. And that made sense back then. But since then, the internet has blossomed and people have become very accustomed to booking a budget flight, booking their own car hire, booking their own hotel, and basically doing the whole thing for themselves. So there's no need for that one-stop shop. And outlets on high streets are expensive things to run. So Thomas Cook has been a relatively high-cost operation, but it's also been losing custom because people find that they simply don't need it anymore. So in a sense, you could say that the business model, while not completely outdated, is becoming much more difficult. And if you don't do it well, and there are people out there arguing that Thomas Cook did this quite badly, you suffer. You suffer financially. Thomas Cook ran out of debts and ultimately it's gone out of business.
That was Theo Leggett at Gatwick Airport. And if you want more details on possible refunds or you need advice, just go to thomascook.caa.co.uk. About 5 million people in France are estimated to have taken the anti-diabetes drug Mediator, and at least 500 are thought to have died as a consequence. That's why both the French medicines watchdog and the pharmaceuticals firm Servier are going on trial today. Our Europe regional editor, Mike Sanders, explained the allegations.
They're alleged to have sold this product knowing that it could cause lesions in the heart valves. So this is where the deaths are coming from. Its generic name is Benfluorex. So it's a drug that's meant to control type 2 diabetes, but it was routinely prescribed in France as an appetite suppressant to help people lose weight. And as you say, 5 million people are thought to have taken it between 1976, when it was first came on the market, and 2009, when it was finally banned. But there were lots of concerns raised along the line, especially by a lung specialist in the west northwestern city of Brest, a woman called Dr. Irène Frachon. And she did a very thorough study of her patients, and she saw that there was a causal link between heart problems and patients who were taking this drug Mediator. And so she you know, raised the alarm, but the concerns seemed to have gone unheeded until 2009.
And who exactly is in court?
There are at least 20 defendants. Some of them are individuals, some of them are companies. Servier itself has a company and 9 of its subsidiaries are in court. This is the Cour de Cassation, which is the highest appeals court in France. And there are also at least 12 individual defendants. Now, they include a former senator, for example, who wrote a report into this drug that seemingly exonerated Servier. She's going to be on trial. There's a number two of Servier who's accused of suppressing some of the details, because there were lots of reports of patients who had previously been healthy having shortness of breath when they were climbing stairs and things like that. And this kind of evidence was seemingly suppressed. One person who won't be in the dock is Jacques Servier, who's the big patriarch of the family. He died in 2014 at the age of 92. And it's thought that his prestige was one of the reasons why perhaps consultants were willing to turn a blind eye, consultants in the drugs monitoring watchdog. He was, in fact, given the Légion d'honneur, or the most highest order of the Légion d'honneur, by a certain Nicolas Sarkozy in 2008. And this Mr. Sarkozy had indeed been Mr. Jacques Servier's lawyer in previous incarnation.
That was Mike Sanders. Spanish police have arrested 9 Catalan separatists suspected of planning violent attacks. They were detained in the early hours of Monday in various locations across the region. Documents and computer hardware were also seized. Pascal Harter heard more from our correspondent in Madrid, Guy Hedgko.
What we've heard so far is that the people who have been arrested were members of the so-called Committees for the Defence of the Republic, which is a very loose term for pro-independence Catalans, who many of them tend to carry out demonstrations and protests in the street. In some cases, they've been known to block roads and even rail lines. But the fact that there's a group of them, or a wing of this organisation, that appear to be willing to prepare explosives, which they might be willing to use, does represent a new development. And I think the authorities will be very worried about that.
Can you give us the wider context? Where are we in terms of the trials of the politicians who were accused, various charges brought against them?
Well, as you say, earlier this year, we saw that trial in the Supreme Court here in Madrid of 12 Catalan independence leaders, those are politicians and civic leaders, and they were facing some very serious charges, including violent rebellion and sedition and misuse of public funds for that failed attempt to break away from Spain 2 years ago. We are expecting the verdict and the sentencing of that trial very soon, in the first week or two of October, and that might explain why there's so much tension building around the Catalan issue again. And pro-independence groups and even the Catalan pro-independence government have said that there will be a big backlash against any Supreme Court ruling that finds those Catalan leaders guilty. So we are expecting some tension coming up in the next few weeks.
That was Guy Hedgko in Spain. At least 7 children have been killed and over 60 injured after a classroom collapsed at a primary school in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. It happened shortly after lessons began this morning. Our correspondent Ferdinand Omondi has been to the site of the school in the Nairobi suburb of Dagoretti and told us more about what he saw there.
Lots of tears, wailing, very angry residents, rescue workers trying to get people off, get children off the rubble. Most of them, by the time I got there, had been rushed to hospital. And by the time everything was done and dusted and complete, 7 children had died. And according to the Education Minister, Professor George Magoha, 64 are in hospital, 2 of them in critical condition. The others have suffered soft tissue injuries and are being taken care of. Their building itself, we could see most of it was just built mainly from iron sheets and wood, and it is completely inexplicable why there would be a story building on top of what appeared to be a very temporary structure.
So presumably there is an investigation underway, but it looks like it was poor building work.
Yes, the education minister did not want to preempt investigations, but I did speak to Professor of Architecture, Professor Alfred Benyon, who was there, and he described that building as a disaster waiting to happen. In his assessment, the school had no proper foundations. The items used to construct it, the wire mesh placed on the concrete, he says, were things that is essentially used for building a cow shed, in his own words. So according to him, this is not even a school that should have been allowed to stay open in the first place. And he's pointing his fingers at the oversight authorities, who he says do not care much about the kind of structures that are put up in informal settlements.
Ferdinand Omondi in Kenya. The British dark comedy Fleabag has been the surprise winner at the Emmy Television Awards ceremony in Los Angeles, with 4 prizes in several categories. They included Outstanding Comedy, Writing and Lead Actress for its creator Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Speaking backstage afterwards, she said the award felt an appropriate way to mark the end of her creation.
To be honest, this just feels like the most beautiful beautiful way to say goodbye to it, actually. And it feels like, as Sean always puts it so beautifully, it does feel like the story is complete. And even though it is, you know, it's so nice to hear that so many people loved it. It's a bit like, oh, damn it, maybe she shouldn't have waved goodbye at the end. But it does feel right. It does feel right. And go out on a high. You know, this you can't get higher than this.
The Outstanding Actor Award went to Billy Porter for his part in Pose, a series about New York's gay dance scene at the height of the HIV/AIDS crisis. He said he was happy he could now be accepted as a black gay man.
It's been a long time. It's been a lot of work. It's been a long time. And I am just so grateful that I lived long enough to see the day where I could stand up in front of the world as my true, authentic self. My true authentic self. I was told that who I am was never going to work. I was told that who and what I am would never be successful. Period. That's what I was told. I did not believe them. I did not believe them. This is proof positive that believe in yourself, invest in yourself, love yourself, and then you teach other people how to do it.
The hotly tipped fantasy epic Game of Thrones managed two awards, one for Outstanding Drama and another for the marvellous Peter Dinklage as Best Supporting Actor. Go Tyrion. Still to come in this podcast.
The autumn equinox happens because we have a tilt on the earth. We're not standing straight up. The earth is leaning by about 23.5 degrees.
We'll hear from an astronomer on the autumnal equinox. Afghan defence officials are investigating who died as the result of a government airstrike in the southern province of Helmand. There are conflicting reports about whether civilians as well as suspected militants were killed. Our South Asia editor Jill McGivering reports.
The government airstrike hit a suspected ammunition store in Musa Qala, a strategically important Taliban stronghold. Various officials say between 14 and 22 suspected militants died, including foreign fighters. But there are also reports that as many as 40 civilians were killed. Eyewitnesses suggest they were guests at a nearby wedding. They may have been caught up in a ground offensive by Afghan special forces following the airstrike. Correspondents say it's the first time for years that Musa Qala has been hit and comes just days before presidential elections.
That was Jill McGivering. Now, as we mentioned in the earlier podcast, world leaders are gathering in New York for a UN climate summit. Leading scientists have warned that the causes and impacts of global warming are accelerating rather than slowing down. The UN has urged leaders to come to the summit with concrete plans, not beautiful speeches or platitudes. China is expected to face further pressure to reduce its carbon emissions, even though the country has significantly increased its renewable energy sources, with wind, solar and hydropower now providing almost a tenth of China's energy needs. Coal is still the largest power source. With the UN pushing for a commitment to end coal power by 2030, our China correspondent John Sudworth examines whether China can deliver.
Even in the video and audio recordings, the extent of melting is now clear. After years of research high up on the Tibetan plateau, Professor Yao Tandong from the Chinese Academy of Sciences says that the glaciers, a vital source of water for China's major rivers, are under serious threat.
The retreating is very fast, about 1 meter per year by thickness, which can be as large as 50 meters per year by length.
50 meters a year, these glaciers are retreating?
Retreating, the largest. So that's why some glaciers in the southeastern Tibetan plateau will be disappeared very soon.
It's a threat China is taking seriously. Its solar energy capacity, for example, has been increasing at an extraordinary rate. One new large-size solar farm, on average, every day for 3 years. At the top of a hill in central China, Cao Xiaohu, a solar engineer with GCL New Energy, is tinkering with an array of panels. Mr. Cao used to work in a coal mine.
Our solar plant can save 50 or 60,000 tons of coal each year. I'm proud doing this job and working in this industry. I believe more and more people will be encouraged to protect the environment.
But China's authoritarian system also protects vested interests. The vast quantities of coal it digs out of the ground still account for 60% of its energy and support jobs and profits. With the country facing considerable economic headwinds of late, there are troubling signs that building work on new coal power stations has recently resumed.
To tell whether China is a real climate leader or not, this is really the moment.
Li Shuo is the senior policy analyst at Greenpeace Asia, based in Beijing.
Still need to convince the politicians in this country that climate action is in the long run in favor to the interest of this country. I think the narrative has begun to change, but whenever there is economic difficulties, I think the resolve tends to be put into test. So we are still in this two steps forward, one step back stage. China, on one hand, is indeed now the largest investor and also manufacturer of some of the most advanced renewable energy technologies in the world. But on the other hand, China also has its darker side.
Which side will win out? China's dark side, its addiction to coal, or its green side, and its world-beating investment in renewables? It's one of the defining questions of our time, and China's stance at the New York conference is being closely watched.
That report was by John Sudworth in China. Iran says President Hassan Rouhani will present a new security plan for the Gulf when he speaks at the United Nations this week. The Foreign Minister, Javad Zarif, said it will be a coalition for hope instead of a coalition for war, a reference to US plans for joint patrols to protect shipping. Lise Doucette reports from New York.
Mr. Zarif called it a serious proposal from Iran's highest political authority at the biggest global forum. He said all countries in the region who depended on these vital shipping lanes in the Strait of Hormuz would be asked to join, as well as the five permanent members of the UN Security Council. Enhanced security in these strategic waterways is an urgent issue. But Iran's arch rivals, including Saudi Arabia, are certain to say Iran is the problem, not the solution.
That was Lise Doucette. Today, September the 23rd, marks the autumn equinox, the first day of autumn in the Northern Hemisphere for 2019. Equinoxes only happen twice a year, when the sun is exactly above the equator between the North and Southern Hemispheres. Brendan Owens is an astronomer at the Royal Observatory in Greenwich, and he told us more.
The autumn equinox happens because we have a tilt on the Earth. We're not standing straight up. The Earth is leaning by about 23.5 degrees. As we move around the sun, the northern and southern hemispheres, they point in different directions. So if you take our longest day of the year for our part of the world, in terms of where I am here in Greenwich, that will happen when we are in June. And that's when the top part of the world, the northern hemisphere, is tilted towards the sun. And then conversely, down in the southern hemisphere, so if you're in New Zealand or Australia, then you'd be experiencing the winter season at the lower part of the southern hemisphere.
And the actual date drifts a little bit, doesn't it, every year?
It does indeed, yes. So we have a lot of little changes in terms of how we move around the sun in our journey around. And it chips by about a day or so. So this time we're marking in 2019 our autumnal equinox on the 23rd of September.
And other years, it might be the 21st or the 22nd.
That's right. 21st, 22nd, 23rd. It shouldn't fall outside of those dates.
We do track this. We have been following this sort of thing as a species for hundreds and hundreds of years. How around the world are equinoxes celebrated?
It's something I think is deep-rooted in human culture because, we come from hunter-gatherer backgrounds. The idea of reaping what you sow or looking as to what animals are available to harvest is very, very important. So in some cultures, this is seen as mid-harvest. In Ireland, for instance, and in Celtic tradition, the name of this month is Man 4, which means, from Irish, means middle harvest or in the middle of the harvest. So that's very important in terms of celebrating what you have what you're harvesting. And that also ties into a modern pagan tradition or celebration called Mabon as well. So that idea of celebrating the harvest. And another example comes from Japanese culture, and specifically Japanese Buddhists also celebrate the autumnal equinox, in fact doing it over the course of 6 days altogether.
That was Brendan Owens from the Royal Observatory in Greenwich on the autumn equinox, which means it's just 92 days till Christmas. Sorry. And that's it from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, do please send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. We're calling on your help to make your listening experience the best imaginable. All you need to do is take a short survey. Visit acast.com/survey. That's acast.com/survey. Your opinion matters.